tuning in. We are live in the studios, and you're listening to Health in 30 on WRCR AM 1300 Radio Rockland. And as always, it's streaming live at WRCR.com. I'm your host, registered nurse Barbara Ficarra. Health in 30 brings you 30 minutes of the latest health and medical news and information with leading guest medical and health experts. If you haven't visited the healthin30.com website, check it out. Go to healthin30.com. That's healthin30.com. You can listen to audio, sign up for free newsletters, get all of the information from all of the shows, and more. Don't forget to check it out. Go to healthin30.com. If you have any comments or questions, email us. Joining us today from Connecticut is Dr. Linda Honan Pellico, an advanced practice nurse and an assistant professor at Yale University School of Nursing. Dr. Pellico will be here to talk about the nursing shortage. Call in with any questions at 845-624-1300. The nursing shortage is not new. Today, Health in 30 will not solve the problem, but we will address the issues and educate the listeners. And in no way will Health in 30 identify any hospitals. The nursing shortage is a national one, and no one is immune to it. And now joining us is Dr. Linda Pellico. Hi, Dr. Pellico. How are you?
I'm very well, Barbara. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks.
Great.
There's so many issues, so many reasons why there is a nursing shortage today. Now, you are a professor, so what do you see happening in nursing today as a professor?
Well, you know, I think for one thing, I've always been optimistic about the profession. And I've also been in it long enough. This is now my 30th year in nursing, so I've been around enough to see the surplus and the shortage and the surplus and the shortage, and we're back in the shortage again, although it seems to have been rather protracted this time, and it's expected to continue to increase until I believe the year 2020, when we will be about 1 million registered nurses behind what we need. So at this point, I think almost every state in the nation is experiencing a shortage, and it's going to continue to increase. So, but from an educational point of view, I have seen nothing but an increase in the last 5 years of students coming into nursing. So I'm very optimistic because I see people continuing to apply, for example, to our program at Yale, where, you know, just brilliant, gifted men and women with backgrounds in the arts and the sciences have discovered nursing. And so I'm very optimistic about the future of nursing. I think like Virginia Henderson did, who is essentially, I think, America's mother of nursing, she said, you know, the world could no more do without nurses than they could mothers.
That's great that there is an increase, though, in nursing students now, because for a while there wasn't an increase. It kind of stayed at a level.
Right, that's right. It was down, but for the last 5 years it's increased. And, in fact, you know, now we've had upwards of a 13% increase in enrollment. To give you an idea, Yale started this program, which is we take people that have bachelor's degrees in anything besides nursing.
Mm-hmm.
And in 3 years, we educate them to be advanced practice nursing. Now, they will not help the bedside shortage of nursing. They are going to be providers of health care, generally in primary care.
Well, that's important. Nurses are not just bedside nurses,
right,
although that is vital and that is where definite need is, but it's so great that there are so many different ways nurses can be nurses today.
That's right. If you're at the bedside, we say womb to tomb. You can start from prenatal and you can go all the way to hospice and everything in between. So I don't know of any other profession that offers you the flexibility in continually retooling yourself, getting innovative and creative, and learning a new area. So I see the profession of nursing as just one that offers vast potential to men and women, also offers us a good salary, although God knows, you know, that I think is one of the problems that maybe I'd like to get to now, and that is that even though the enrollment is going up, and my students, we've always had this, and this Yale started its program, as I was saying, in 1974. We were the first to start for specialty practice to come in 3 years, become, for example, a certified nurse midwife or a nurse practitioner. Today, there are over 50 programs like
this. Now, isn't there a shortage, though, of professors teaching these classes?
Yes. I mean, so that's one of the issues is now we have had last year, I believe the research says that over 42,000 qualified applicants were turned away from nursing schools because there's not enough faculty to teach.
Wow. Now, how do you see that changing for professors? What do you think is needed to get more professors out there?
Well, I think you know, there's not going to be one silver bullet. When something is this complex, mm-hmm. it's going to be multifactorial.
Sure.
I think scholarships are going to be needed mm-hmm. for people to go back to school. I think that we really need to think about how much we pay faculty. So, for example, you know, an average master's prepared faculty. Now, keep in mind, you need to have a doctorate level to be teaching in graduate programs. But an average master's prepared faculty person who's teaching, for example, at Yale,
mm-hmm.
Earns $55,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's the standard across the board on recent research, that a master's faculty earns $55,000.
Mm-hmm.
That same person who is a nurse practitioner, because that's what she's teaching, could make over $70,000 out in the private practice. Now, I, for example, am educated as a clinical nurse specialist.
Right.
If I chose to leave the university now, with my credentials, I would be looking at a 2 to 3-fold increase in my salary.
Wow.
2 to 3-fold. We're not talking
right.
$10,000 or $20,000. We're talking a significant amount of money.
That's
a
major difference,
so
yeah.
So wages mm-hmm. certainly would make a career in academia. Well, I mean, there's now obviously press about it, so people are finally
right.
understanding that, you know, the salary is not commensurate with responsibility, and it is now having a snowball effect. So if you don't pay the doctorally prepared registered nurse the amount of money, she's going to go into the private sector where she can make the salary, and so what's the end result? We're turning away 42,000 qualified people because there's not enough people to teach them.
Right.
So, you know, and it's more than just the salary. I don't want to act like it, you know, it is only that. But, I mean, you know, the cost of educating people to practice professions is expensive.
Right.
If you go in now to, you know, get a degree in mathematics, for example, you know, there's no problem teaching a seminar in mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to learn how to do medical surgical nursing, not only do I have to lecture you, but I need to put you in, and when I put you in the field, I can't put you in the field with 30 people to one nurse. I have to put you with a ratio that I'm paying for preceptors, clinical preceptors. So, you know, you understand that why institutions, universities would like to take more students in, but they're also, the end result is that, you know, you need to have the clinical sites, you need to have classroom space, there's budget concerns, the cost of the preceptors.
Right.
You know.
But that's good news, though, that students do want to go into nursing. So
yeah, absolutely.
That is great news, because for a while it was just at an all-time low almost, where kids didn't even want to choose that as their profession.
Right. And see, and that was one of the things that I did want to talk about, is I think that, you know, for example, I really think that Johnson & Johnson has done a wonderful service for nursing. When the Olympics started, they started that website called DiscoverNursing.com.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that they've done a wonderful job of getting people to see nursing. Now, I truthfully would like them to advertise us being little more than caring.
Yes.
I mean, you know, it really, patients now present in the hospital with such complex diseases and multi-system systems, because obviously we're aging, and the technology has done nothing but get sophisticated. You really need intelligent, bright people
yes.
who can problem
mm-hmm.
solve in a moment. And so caring is really important, but so is intellect, and so is clinical acumen, and so is technical, you know, expertise. I want your hands and your brain to work
exactly
in tandem.
Right. You're educated professionals. You're not just that handmade in stereotype portrayal that
no, and you know that
today.
If we're sick.
Right.
You know that if you're sick. And I think that's
right.
one of nurses' problems is, honestly, we were inaudible for a very long time. And if you're inaudible, you're necessarily, I think, invisible. If nobody hears you, they don't see you.
Mm-hmm.
We were invisible to anybody except the sick. The sick have always known how important we were.
Yes.
But, you know, we were, there was a study done called the Woodhull Study, and they, I think, evaluated 20,000 articles. Don't quote me on that, but I think it's about 20,000 articles. Less than 1% of the time in magazines like Newsweek, Time, less than 1% nurses were quoted for anything related to healthcare. In newspapers, less than 4% of the time. That means somebody else is speaking for me.
Right.
So one is, A, people out there in the press need to understand if there's a healthcare issue, physicians don't work in silos, and neither do nurses. We're members of a team, and both of us need to speak. And so, therefore, you better ask me to speak to you about nursing. Don't ask my physician colleagues to speak for me.
Right. I agree that with that, though. Physicians and nurses do work together. We're not separated in the hospital. It's not physicians. It's not nurses. It's both working together for the good of the patient.
Right.
And in the media as well, that's actually Health in 31 reason is not only to educate the public about vital health issues, but it is also to get more nurses involved in the media stepping forward, which I have many physicians actually who come on the show, which I am so grateful to them, and it's so great that to have their support. But I'm trying actually, too, to get more nurses to speak out in the media because they do have a lot to offer.
Right.
And you're right, a lot of times they are not quoted. It's always the other healthcare professionals.
Right, somebody else speaking for them. And I think that, you know, that speaks again to our educational system. We need to educate nurses when they're in through nursing school to advocate for themselves and to be empowered enough to speak. You know, if you make a mistake, you make a mistake. Go on.
Exactly.
But you don't need to be afraid about having an opinion.
Right. Maybe that should be incorporated into the whole nursing program, communications class.
Right.
truthfully, because there's so much knowledge that they do have and they could offer it to the public.
Correct.
So thank you for being here, actually speaking out on this topic.
Yeah.
But I want to get to the bedside nursing now because I know that's a major issue with hospitals across the country where the census of the patient ratio per nurse is high because the patients are so much sicker and they're dealing with so many issues, the nurses. And the graying of America actually is the graying of the nurse, too, because the average age for a nurse is in her mid-40s. And when they retire, then who's going to take over?
Right.
So let's just touch upon that a little bit because that's a major problem now.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, right now the average age of a registered nurse graduating from college is 30. Now, in 1976, when I graduated, the average age was 21. So we're older discovering nursing, and that's absolutely great. Mm-hmm. We're discovering nursing, but, you know, I really think that we need to get back to getting the youth of America to look at nursing and to go into it not as a second degree, which I think, don't get me wrong, I think it's wonderful that we have college-educated, articulate men and women in areas in the humanities and the arts and sciences coming into nursing. That does nothing but help our profession.
Right.
On the other hand, I'd really like to see some 21-year-olds coming out because as somebody that used to work in management, you, to me, are, you know, a longer employee.
Right.
You know, so one of the things that I was always taught was that by fifth grade, it is believed that most children have already decided what the prestigious professions are in our society.
That's very young.
Very young. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If you go into grammar schools, and this is what I sometimes do in the neighborhood, is I go in and I look at things like be a policeman, you know what I mean? But look at the posters that are out there. And so I've actually contacted companies that do be a fireman, be a policeman, be a doctor, to say, where's nursing on this? You know, I mean, so that even from, I mean, the media image starts much younger, that we need to really do a better job educating the youth. But if you look at the media image, for example, House, I love House, don't get me wrong, I think it's a great show. But those three physicians are specialists in and of themselves, and nobody works but them. So we need to do a better job in the media to get the younger people to see nursing for the depth and breadth and the privileged profession that it is.
Right. You mentioned that show. Is there even a nurse on that show?
I
haven't really watched it that much.
Occasionally in passing, but, you know, she wouldn't certainly have a name.
Right.
But as far as the people that are coming in now, I think the real concern is if these people that are graduating from college now start on the unit, there was a study done recently that said one out of every three nurses today under the age of 30 plans on leaving that job in their first year.
Within the first year? Wow.
One out of three. That tells you about the stress that is in that nurse feels, because you see, we educate them to this profession where they want to provide holistic care,
right?
And know the patient, mm-hmm. know the family, teach them, be able to prepare them for discharge. And this shortage of nursing has done nothing but increase the stress, increase the dissatisfaction. There's been numerous reports about increasing the medication errors, for example.
Right.
The shortage definitely has poor patient outcomes. So they say, you know what, I'm not mm-hmm. going to stay in the hospital.
Right.
I can go out and I can do visiting nurses, for example.
Right.
I mean, that's the beauty of the profession, is if you're unhappy in the institution that you're at, your feet can walk and you can get another position.
Right.
But I think we need to really think about, now that they've gone into the profession, we have got to think about what are we going to do to keep them in the
profession.
Exactly.
It's so physically demanding, and not only physically, though, but emotionally. It is just such a demanding profession. And multitasking, I truly think nurses invented that term.
That's
because
right.
It's not, you're not doing one thing, you're doing 20 things at one time.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because I looked at just a recent study when I knew I was going to be coming on the air talking about this,
mm-hmm.
about why nurses left the profession, if they left the profession.
Right.
They interviewed them, and they said that those that left because their current position was A, more rewarding, they had a better salary, they had more convenient work hours, but interestingly, the fourth thing plays in what you said, and that is that they felt personal safety issues were involved.
Right.
That they felt safer in this newer area than they were because they were too stressed within the institution.
Right. Imagine if every patient had a private duty nurse, how perfect that would be. You could spend just hours and hours with the patient, educating them from everything, from
right.
being there, giving them their medications, and educating them
right.
through beginning to end. But obviously, it's not that way, and nurses have so many patients in the day, and if they're out in one room giving medications, and then another room is calling, and they need to go hang blood there, or an emergency happens in another room, they have to be in so many places at one time, and it's very difficult for them.
I mean, I think the shortage is particularly felt in the acute care institution.
Yes.
Yeah, and med-surg nurses. I think the stats are 60% of us are working in med-surg areas, and that's where I work. And I can tell you, with the students, you know, they are delighted to see us come up on the floor, because, you know, we represent a labor source.
Right. Now,
so, yeah.
Studies are done, though. I mean, there's study after study showing that nurses are vital to preventing errors in the hospital, and
right.
it will decrease deaths and medication errors and everything. I mean, there's study and document after document substantiating this, and I'm just wondering what the next step is. I mean, all the data is there, so who's going to determine it? Is it a federal funding type of issue that comes into play, or is it individually each hospital has to come up with their own sourcing for monies for the nurses to, you know, increase their staff, or
no,
do you know?
Well, Linda Aikens from University of Pennsylvania, I think, is the person who really, you know, has done the phenomenal work to really make visible the impact of nursing.
Right.
And so no more it is, you know, this, well, I think they make a difference, or, you know what I mean, I know they do, but I know they do emotionally. I don't know they do intellectually. I don't know that they do, you know, economically. I mean, she's done the work to show that, you know, for every one patient you give me over my average workload, you increase the risk of surgical death by about 7%. I mean, that's a mathematical calculation. So the question becomes now that if you showed that if you have a bachelor's degree, people that have bachelor's degree, for example, have better outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that if you decrease my ratio, you have better outcomes.
Right.
So what does that do? That has financial implications. That has financial implications on an institution who is burdened. You know, it's not that the hospitals are the bad guys.
Right.
They are burdened with reimbursement rates that are inappropriate and with people that have no health insurance.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not rocket science, but you can't blame hospitals.
Right.
They are left with, you know, what do you do when somebody comes into the hospital with chest pain with no insurance? Are you going to say to go away? No,
right,
not.
No, you treat them.
People come into the hospital, you treat them.
Right.
They get the same exact care. That's the beauty of America. Everybody has the same standard of care, whether you're a CEO, a CFO, or an illegal immigrant that comes into a major medical center. Doesn't matter. Same standard of care.
Right.
But ultimately, it does impact on dollars. And these institutions need those dollars. So, I think that there's... somebody far more intelligent than I am and far more business savvy will going to have to come up with the answers. But I think absolutely, you know, we need to understand that these are very, very complex issues that I think need reimbursement federally.
Right.
Because, you know, hospitals aren't bad guys. Their hands are tied. And, you know, there's some, I guess, creative things we can think about in the meantime, like skill mix and looking at patient acuity and... but, you know, ultimately, if the health of our citizen means something, then we're going to have to understand that people are really going to have to look for funding.
Right.
Yeah.
For those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to Health in 30 on WRCR and 1300 Radio Rockland. And as always, it's streaming live at WRCR. Dr. Linda Honan-Pellico, advanced practice nurse and assistant professor at Yale University, is here talking about the nursing shortage. Call in with any questions, 845-624-1300, and there's a caller on the line.
Oh, great.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Great subject. As we are aging, we have more need for good quality nurses. What I would like to see is our healthcare system provide nurses, you know, in the homes for such as the elderly, so they don't have to wind up in a hospital. And if they do have to go to a hospital, of course, get better care, and in nursing homes.
Right.
So, you know, of course, all that costs a lot of money, and I think that's where our healthcare system needs to look into. I would like to see my parents, myself even, hopefully down the line, with good quality care that is so needed.
Right, and geriatric nurse practitioners are the perfect people to do it. You're absolutely right. The elderly is the, you know, baby boomers are getting older. But not only that, the elderly are living far longer. And so the demand for services are going to be significant.
But our healthcare system has to help us.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I agree
100%. Has to be a big advocation for somebody to... Well, we've been talking about it, but there's needs in all areas, but this is one of the big needs
it also makes common sense.
Yeah.
If you keep a person in their home, that is far more cost-effective than it is to use a convalescent home.
Correct, and keep them healthier. And the same thing with, and if they have to go to a nursing home, keep them healthier. If they have to go to a hospital, get better care so they can go home or to a facility. But again, our healthcare system needs a lot of work.
Well, and you know, that's why I see nursing is so powerful for changing the face of healthcare, because unlike other professions, we are not about cure. What are we about? Preventative care.
Exactly.
Right. So don't misunderstand. I can cure. I can cure, you know, pneumonia as good as the next guy. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, what does nursing do? Nursing goes in from grammar schools and talks to children about not smoking, right? I mean, we are all about preventative education. If I have a smoker, I don't berate him for smoking. I talk about what are the kinds of things that we can put in place to help you quit, right. and why the reasons are. So that's why I think nursing is just, you know, the answer to many of the health problems in the United
States. They have to stand together and be one big strong voice.
There we go. And that's the other thing, where there's 2.7 million of us. If we found our voice, it would be deafening.
Yeah. Well, good luck.
Okay, thanks for calling. We actually have another caller on the line. Hello? Hi, you're on WRCR.
How are you? This is Sandy.
Hi.
Regular listener. How's everything?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to say that I wanted to take my hat off to the nurses. I mean, they're the ones that do most of the work. They're the ones that take all the abuse.
Yeah.
They're the ones, there are two of them and 100 patients in the hospital for whatever reason may not have enough on staff, and everybody blames them for not being available. So they're doing 100 times what they should be doing. And I've seen over and over again, and I see how hard they work and how much we patients need them. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
And the other thing is that, you know, what patients often don't understand is how much you impact our lives. You know, I would say that nurses, in lots of ways, you know, we are witness to both the best of times and the worst of times, and you know, and that changes us. Witnessing, you know, critical incidents, for lack of a better word, really, I think, makes us sometimes, I think, live life fuller. You know, we know life is very fleeting, and in a moment, everything can change, and that's a privilege to really understand. Lots of people don't really get that. They don't understand how every day really is a blessing. Not to be, you know, waxing philosophically here, but, I mean, that's what nursing gives you. Nursing lets you know that every day is a privilege, and everybody you witness.
I've seen the sensitivity given to people that are minutes away from their end.
That's right.
I've gone in myself, unfortunately, more than once to be sewn back together.
Yeah.
And the way they treat me, where even though I'm used to it, I'm nervous. I'm afraid. I don't know what's going to happen now. And they just calm you down and do what they have to do and get you going again.
Right. Yeah.
That's one great aspect of nursing, is when you see the patient from the beginning when they're admitted, and then you just, when they're at their worst state and they're so anxious, and then you help them through that, and then all the way until the end when they're discharged, you just see that whole progression, and it is a great feeling.
I think there's lots of us out here. They just want to say thank you. And
thank you. Thanks for calling.
That's great.
Thanks. Linda, thank you so very much. We have only a couple minutes left. Do you want to sum up maybe in a minute of solving this healthcare crisis?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
we'll solve it right now.
I wish I could.
I know.
I would just like to say that, you know, I think that nurses are really privileged with the intimacy we see and we witness, and we know the profound impact we have on people's lives. And I just encourage every person to ask their son and their daughter to consider a nursing profession, because it is a worthy profession that really you'll never end the day knowing that you didn't impact someone's life in some way. And not a lot of people can say that they made a difference every day, and you can in nursing.
Right. Thank you so very much, Dr. Pellico, for joining us today. Thank you.
Nice talking to you.
You too. Thank you. And next week, join us on February 3rd. Registered dietitian Pat Baird, award-winning author and nutrition expert, will be here to talk about living a heart-healthy lifestyle. Pat has appeared on the Health Network, CNN, and CBS Morning Show, and now Pat will join Health in 30 as one of its experts. And actually, next week we'll talk about Women's Heart Health Fair, which is February 16th at Madison Square Garden from 7:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. It will offer free 15-minute heart screenings to measure women's cholesterol, blood glucose levels, and body mass index. We'll give you all of the information next week on the Health in 30 show, and you can check out the healthin30.com website. We'll have the information there. Prevention is key, and how awesome that this health fair is offered to women for a free 15-minute screening. Health in 30 is always talking about education and prevention, and here's an opportunity for women to get checked out for free. So don't forget to check out the healthin30.com website. Email us with any comments or questions, and let us know if you want a particular topic to be talked about. Thanks for listening. I'm Barbara Ficarra for Health in 30. Have a great week.
AM 1300, WRCR, Spring Valley.
USA Radio Network News, Dennis Martin reporting. The Senate has unanimously confirmed Army General David Petraeus as the new commander of U.S. troops in Iraq.
The ayes are 81, the nays are 0.
President Bush promptly said he was pleased.
You're going into an important battle in this war in Iraq, and I give you my full support and wish you guys peace.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates says a resolution now pending in the Senate that denounces President Bush's planned troop surge in Iraq could undercut U.S. military commanders while encouraging our enemies.
Any indication of flagging will in the United States gives encouragement to those folks, and I'm sure that that's not the intent behind the resolutions, but I think it may be the effect.
U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was in Iraq today. She was told by Iraq's prime minister that Iraq wants to take control of its security from U.S. troops as quickly as possible. A six-year-old girl who was apparently abducted from her Arizona home today has been found safe and sound. Police say the suspect, a 26-year-old registered sex offender from Louisiana, is still on the loose. On Wall Street, the Dow fell 15 points to 12,487. USA Radio Network News.
Are you having trouble with your credit card payments? Is the stress and the pressure starting to affect your life? You don't have to do this alone. Call Debt Relief of America. They can help you eliminate up to 60% of your credit card debt. Debt Relief of America is a professional debt negotiation firm that has proven to wipe out over $5 million of credit card debt in the last year alone. You don't have to go bankrupt. You can erase your debt so interest and late fees quit piling up on you. Call Debt Relief of America today for a free, no-obligation debt consultation. Their caring, friendly consultants will answer your questions so you can begin to get your debt problem fixed. Call for your free consultation. 800-499-4102. That's 800-499-4102. You don't have to feel like you're drowning in debt. You have an army of debt negotiators on your side so you can win the battle with credit card debt. Call 800-499-4102. That's 800-499-4102.
Two men who set fire to a college dorm room 7 years ago were sentenced today.
I sent you to the Department of Corrections for a period of 5 years. You ought to serve 16 months before you're eligible for parole.
Sean Ryan and Joseph Lepore pleaded guilty in November to setting the fire at Seton Hall University. The flames killed three students and injured several others. Today's sentence infuriated some members of the victims' families.
I know that somewhere I will be out there praying to God that they are eternally banished to hell.
Iran is demanding the removal of the International Atomic Energy Agency official responsible for nuclear inspections inside Iran. Iran accuses him of passing information to inappropriate countries and their media. Canada is concerned that its native caribou populations dropped between 40 and 86% over the last 10 years and are still declining. Canadian environmentalists are worrying they may not be able to recover. USA Radio Network News.
And I'm Blaise Gomez with your local news here on WRCR AM 1300 Radio Rockland. The IRS is investigating several early income tax filings requesting unusually large amounts for the special telephone tax refund. The Internal Revenue Service yesterday said that some excessive claims include requests for thousands of dollars, indicating that they would have had phone bills topping $100,000 or an amount exceeding their income. Taxpayers are reminded to avoid mistakes and get refunds quickly by filing their returns electronically through IRS.gov, and to stay away from tax preparers who make false claims, such as suggesting customers can receive hundreds of dollars and more from the program. Federal officials stopped collecting the long-distance excise tax last August and then authorized a one-time refund for excise tax collected from March 2003 through July 2006. Taxpayers can choose to receive the standard refund amount of $30 to $60 or can figure the refund using the actual amount of tax paid based on their phone bills and other records. Ramapo police arrested a Ramsey, New Jersey man this afternoon for impersonating a New York City police officer. According to police reports, 43-year-old Brian Schrager drove into the Saddle River Pool parking lot and approached an unnamed man with a fake badge while wearing a sweatsuit with NYPD insignias, demanding to know why he was present and how long he would remain. Coincidentally, Schrager was unaware that the man he approached was an off-duty Ramapo police officer who held him at the scene until uniformed officers arrived to confirm that he was not a law enforcement officer and then executed the arrest. The man has been charged with criminal impersonation and was released on an appearance ticket. In other news,